Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. For some reason, killing 120,000 people with bullets and bombs pales in comparison to killing 1,400 people with poison gas. Such is the case in Syria, as well as other conflicts. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, has some insights for us today on weapons of mass destruction and fighting a just war. Lincoln, the time is yours.
Yeah, just war. This is something that's come up to haunt us of late with the discussion about what to do in Syria. Yeah. And things are already underway, but there's been quite a discussion. And I'm really brought to mind on what's led to this present discussion, the gassing with sarin gas of civilians in Syria. Mm-hmm. It seems a slam dunk, to quote a famous security analyst, that these weapons were used, even if it's not absolutely as certain as some might say who used them, but it's unacceptable. But it puts me to mind of a statement Senator Dirksen, I think it was years ago, on an appropriations committee in Washington. He says, a billion here and a billion there. And he says, and pretty soon you're talking real money.
It adds up. Yes, it does.
The part that I find mildly troubling, if not offensive, about this whole discussion of the gassing here is this is a civil war that's been going on for 2 years, where I remember just a few weeks ago seeing a photograph from the air of a refugee camp in Jordan, where, as I remember, there are something like 150,000 refugees in that one camp. There have been a million, I think 2 or 3 million people already left Syria. I forget the numbers, but many tens of thousands, but I think it's way more than that, people killed in the civil war. It's bloody. Yeah. And the thing that in these contested areas, what people have to deal with every day, because some of the people live in a rebel-held area, and they go to work in a government-held area. Yeah. In fact, when I say some, many, yeah. If not a majority, because they're often just one neighborhood and then another neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And the usual activity in that part of the world, as in most of Europe, Americans don't understand this, is people buy groceries every day. They buy fresh food. And a standard practice in Syria is snipers to hang about, usually government snipers particularly, they hang about the windows of buildings near these marketplaces. My. And when the people come, women and children, to buy their daily stuff, they shoot them. Oh. And I read one story of a town there, I think it was 400 people had been killed in the last couple of weeks, which is typical. Just any time of the day, they walk out in the open, they'll be shot. Someone will be shot every day. Yeah. I don't know where people get the selective moral outrage that now suddenly with sarin gas, it's on necessarily a different moral plane. Mm-hmm. I think all of it is obscene.
Absolutely.
As any war, it's always been somewhat so, but the wars of the 20th and the 21st century are wars against civilians. Mm-hmm. They die in radically disproportionate numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, in all of our discussion, we need to realize the profanity of war, I think, and it's not like some tipping point, line in the sand, as President Obama said, and I know politically that might have seemed smart for him to say that, but in reality, we're watching the tragedy of humanity worked out in microcosm there in Syria. Man killing man for the most banal reasons and in the most bloodthirsty ways. And I heard one of the congressmen, I think it was, I'm sure if he's a congressman or a senator, on one of the discussions that preceded, you know, the final vote on what to do militarily. Mm-hmm. But he described how people die from the gas, you know, there's phlegm bubbling up and they choke and so on. Well, that sounded pretty shocking, but I think someone hit by a mortar round their intestines are bubbling out of their stomach and they die in bloody agony over several hours or several days. I think why is that better? Mm-hmm. I mean, in reality, the conventional weapons maim and kill very slowly and very barbarously. Mm-hmm. And we need to understand part of what's going on behind the international revulsion of German biological warfare. the revulsion is, yes, that it kills on a large scale, but it's indiscriminate. Mm-hmm. And it was long proven. There's been a lot of discussion about the Geneva Conventions. It was proven in World War I that, yes, it killed lots of people, but the wind can shift and it'll kill your own people.
Yes.
The main reason militaries don't use these things is that they are not strategically reliable. It's not how many people can be killed. All militaries like to kill as many people as possible. And so I really believe that this discussion of biological agents is pious at best and double standard at worst. Yes, we need to uphold the ban on it because bans on all sorts of war are very good and keep them in place. We shouldn't lower bans. Mm-hmm. But I really think it's dangerous for people to sort of slice war apart and we allow this part and not that. Mm-hmm. In some ways, war has become more satanic in the modern era by these agreements. Because the loss of life is tremendous, and it just makes it more cynical. Yes, we'll do this, but we won't do that. But in reality, all the modern wars have degenerated into something satanic. It's the only word I can use. The Germans bombing London night after night,
yeah.
Bombing civilians. They weren't bombing any military target. Then in retaliation until the end of the war, the Allies, including Americans, bombed Dresden and other cities, you know, into dust.
Into dust, yeah.
They created, knowingly, with incendiary bombs, create winds of 200 mile an hour, searing winds that would incinerate, not just burn people. People disappear. They never found them. Mm-hmm. They were like in a blast furnace. Mm-hmm. And then in Japan, where I believe there was an element of racism, and we perfected firebombing of Japanese cities, as Robert McNamara, and I may have even mentioned on this program, shortly before he died, he gave a wonderful series of interviews just sitting on a chair talking to the camera where he tried to explain himself. And it's chilling to hear this man explain how they perfected firebombing of Japanese cities. And he laughed at the destruction with nuclear bombs. He says, we killed more people in a single night in Tokyo than with a nuclear bomb. And he named city after city. So where do weapons of mass destruction fit in this? You know, I'm not trying to damn the U.S. It just happens to be the largest military power. But all military force, by definition, kills and maims on a massive scale. I could have wished that the world was morally outraged earlier by the Syria misadventures. Mm-hmm. I could have wished that the West, the coalition of the willing, had been more cognizant of consequences of the military action that they began. You know, war begets war. And what I want to talk about just briefly in the few minutes that we have left is just make a nod toward what is still operative, but it's still dangerous. A doctrine that St. Augustine, I shouldn't even put him as a saint, but Augustine of Hippo, theologian and leader in the Roman Catholic Church back in the Middle Ages, he developed, for the first time in Western thought at least, the just war theory. And it had things like you shouldn't go to war unless there's a chance of success. You shouldn't go to war unless good can come of it. You should have a rule of proportionality. Use just enough force to defeat the evil, not overwhelming force. And I don't know where that leaves shock and awe and other campaigns. But if you really analyze the just war theory, it's situation ethics writ large. And it whitewashes the fact that to get a goal, you delve into what we know as the heart of darkness. And yes, for civil governance, there may be times they're forced into that. But I think people of faith, people of religious sensibility, are corrupting their moral compass to start indulging in even just war theory. Very problematic.
It seems to me that what I hear you saying is when we think about war, we don't decide whether that's a just war or that's not a just war. We should just simply say that's a war. We don't want to be part of it.
Right.
Yeah.
Killing is not good.
Yeah.
Now and then, you know, you're dealing with somebody, you know, that has a bloodlust, like Idi Amin, I think, sort of obvious. I remember he used to keep organs of his opponents in his fridge. I mean,
mercy.
You're dealing with the true heart of darkness there.
My.
Others, it's all on a scale. Like, yes, I think Bashar al-Assad is, you know, an autocratic leader of the sort that I wouldn't want to live under. But, you know, he's autocratic. He's not. I don't think you could make a case that he's sort of, you know, a raving homicidal maniac. He's a leader of a system that I'm uncomfortable with, mm-hmm. that now is fighting for its survival, and he's doing what it takes to survive. Very unfortunate, very evil. But, you know, in World War II, you know, the French government went down to the Germans. They did what it took to survive. They were fighting, and they did things that were not good. I really think you're in enchanted ground when you start talking about war. All countries do unforgivable things when they're involved in conflict. Part of it is part of being in a sinful, fallen world. But we shouldn't think that we can pass absolute moral judgments for or against rulers. It's worth remembering that President Obama, who I think has done a very good job as president. I'm hardly opposed to him, and it's not my role to dismiss him on this program. You know, we support all rulers, but just, you know, giving a general critique, there's a great irony that, you know, he was given the Nobel Peace Prize. Mm-hmm. What is one to think of someone lauded for peace who is now beating the drums to war? I just think it's a lesson that anybody can drift into this if they don't watch their moral compass more closely. And a nation that lusts after war is not a good nation. And the West, and now in this another coalition of the willing, I believe, if you look closely at it, a lot of it is less a search for justice than a bloodlust. So let's go in again. Let's show them. And in reality, we put a blind eye in the West to Saddam Hussein when he gassed his own people using our gas.
Yes.
That was given to him by us. As President Clinton has said in regrets later, you know, we turned quite a blind eye to Rwanda and the genocide there. I think we need more moral outrage, but less military intervention.
We need more spirituality. We need to get out of this
religion. You've been listening to me because that's what
Absolutely.
I say. There's too much religion in the world and not enough spirituality. There needs to be a distinction between the two.
Absolutely. And I love that. I love the fact that you are telling people that, because we need to know that. When we look at the world, there is a battle going on between good and evil. And the only weapon that we need to have is a spiritual heart, one that is full of love. And if we can have an army of people like that, good things can happen. Am I on the right track here?
Right. Mm-hmm. And we could do massive amount to help the refugees from this war. Jordan and some other countries in the periphery are doing things, but their resources are limited, and they're not being helped very much. That's where we could have a new Berlin airlift and help them. You know, and again, we're not to suggest public policy, but I believe whatever's done should be of a moral suasion, not of a militaristic thing. Militarism breeds militarism, but moral concern breeds thankfulness and friendship for generations to come.
Mm. LibertyMagazine.org is the website, www.libertymagazine.org. Check it out. Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, thank you for being with us today.
Always a pleasure.
Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call Three Angels Broadcasting Network at 618-627-4651 or email us through our website at 3abn.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.